Anywhere. Everywhere. No one knows the Magisterium better than Warren. But then you will let me out of the cage. You'll agree to get me out of the cage. How much did Call trust a weird lizard that wasn't really a lizard? Maybe if he drank some of the water, which was gross, full of eyeless fish and weird sulfur and minerals, maybe he could do better magic. Like the way he had with the sand. Like he wasn't supposed to. Maybe he could draw the current backward and bring the boat to him. Yeah, right. He had no idea how to do that. Call, you must listen to me. You don't know what you are. Apparently, he didn't know lots of things. Fine, said Call. If you get me back to my room, I'll let you out of the cage. Let me out. Now. Wheedled the elemental. We could go faster. Nice try, Call snorted. Which way? The little lizard directed him and he began to walk, his clothes still wet and cold against his skin. They passed sheets of rock that seemed to melt into one another, columns of limestone and curtains of it, falling like draperies. They passed a bubbling stream of mud, snaking back and forth between Call's feet. Warren urged him ahead, the blue flame on his back turning the cage into a lantern. At one point, the corridor narrowed so much that Call had to turn sideways and squeeze himself between the sheets of stone. He finally popped out the other side like a cork out of a bottle, a long tear in his shirt where it had caught on an edge of rock. "Shh," whispered Warren, crouching ahead of him. "Quiet, little mage." Call was standing in the dark corner of a huge cavern full of echoing voices. The cavern was almost circular, the stone ceiling overhead sweeping up into a massive dome. The walls were decorated with jewel formations that illustrated various weird, possibly alchemical symbols. In the center of the room was a rectangular stone table with a candelabra rising out of it, each of a dozen tapers dripping thick streams of wax. The big, high-backed chairs around the table were filled by masters who looked like rock formations themselves. Call flattened himself into the shadows so he wouldn't be spotted, pressing the cage behind him to hide the light. "Young Jasper showed bravery in throwing himself in front of the wyverns," said Master Lemuel, with a glance at Master Milagros, amusement showing on his face. "Even if he was unsuccessful?" Anger raced through Call's veins. He and Tamara and Aaron had worked hard to do well on that test, and they were talking about Jasper.
"Bravery will only get you so far," said Master Tanaka, the tall, thin master who taught Peter and Kai. "The students who returned from our most recent mission had plenty of bravery, and yet those were some of the worst injuries I've seen since the war. They barely made it back alive. Even the fifth years weren't prepared for elementals working together like that."
"The enemy is behind this," Master Rockmaple interrupted, running a hand through his ruddy beard. The image of the injured students, bloody and burned, coming through the gate had stuck with Call, and he was glad to know that wasn't how students returned from a typical mission. "The enemy is breaking the truce in ways he thinks we won't be able to trace back to him. He is getting ready to return to war. I'll wager that, while we've deluded ourselves into thinking he's staying in his remote sanctuary, working on his horrible experiments, he's actually been making greater and more devastating weapons. Not to mention alliances."
Master Lemuel snorted. "We have no proof. This could simply be a change among the elementals."
Master Rockmaple whirled on him. "How can you trust the enemy?
Anyone who wouldn't balk at putting a piece of the void inside animals and even children who slaughtered the most vulnerable among us is capable of anything. I'm not saying I trust him. I just don't want to prematurely panic that the truce has been broken. World forfend that we break it because of our fears, and by doing so, incite a new war, one worse than the last.
Everything would be different if we had a Makar on our side. Master Milagros tucked her pink lock of hair behind her ear nervously. This year's entering students had exceptional trial scores. Is it possible that our Makar could be among them? Rufus, you've had experience with this before.
It's too soon to tell anything, said Rufus. Constantine himself didn't start showing signs of an affinity with chaos magic until he was 14.
Maybe you just refused to look for them then as you refuse to look for them now, said Master Lemuel disagreeably.
Rufus shook his head. His face was rough-edged in the flickering light.
It doesn't matter, he said. We need a different plan. The Assembly needs a different plan. It is too great a burden to set upon the shoulders of any child. We should all remember the tragedy of Verity Torres.
I agree. A plan is needed,
Master Rockmaple said.
Whatever the enemy's scheme, we can't just bury our heads in the sand and act like it will go away, nor can we simply wait forever for something that might never happen.
Enough of this bickering, said Master North.
Master Milagros was saying earlier that she's discovered a possible error in the third algorithm of folding air into metal. I thought perhaps we could discuss the anomaly.
Anomaly? Figuring that there was no point risking discovery to listen to something he wouldn't understand anyway, Call slid back into the gap between the rocks. He wriggled through, emerging on the other side with his mind full of his father's words. What was it he had said? The more you learn about the magical world, the more you will be drawn into it, drawn into its old conflicts and dangerous temptations. The war with the enemy had to be the conflict Cole's father had been talking about. Warren stuck his scaly nose through the bars, his tongue flicking in the air.
We go a new way. Better way. Fewer masters. Safer.
Call grunted and followed Warren's directions. He was beginning to wonder if Warren actually knew where they were going, or if he was just leading Call deeper into the caves. Maybe he and Warren would spend the rest of their lives wandering the twisty caverns. They would become a legend to new apprentices who would speak about the lost student and his caged cave lizard in hushed tones of dread. Warren pointed and Call scrambled up the side of a pile of rocks, sending shards flying. The corridors were bigger now, zigzagged with sparkling patterns that teased Call's mind, as if they could be read if he only knew how. They passed through a cave full of odd underground plants, big, red-tipped ferns that stood in still pools of glittering water, long fronds of lichen drifting from the ceiling and brushing against Call's shoulders. He looked up and thought he saw a pair of glittering eyes disappearing into the shadows. He stopped.
Warren?
Here,
the lizard urged, flicking his tongue toward an arched doorway at the other end of the room. Someone had carved words into the highest part of the arch. Thoughts are free and subject to no rule.
Beyond the archway flickered an odd light. Call moved toward it, curiosity getting the better of him.
It gave off a golden glow, like that of a fire, though it was no warmer when he stepped through the door than it had been on the other side. He was in another large space, a cavern that seemed to spiral down along a steep and winding path, All along the walls of the room were shelves holding thousands upon thousands of books, most with yellowed pages and ancient bindings. Call stepped to the center of the room, where the sloping path began, and looked over the edge. There were levels and levels, all illuminated with the same golden light and ringed with more bookshelves. Call had found the library. And other people were there, too. He could hear the echoes of their hushed conversation. More masters? No. Glancing around, he saw Jasper 3 tiers down in his gray uniform. Celia was standing across from him. It had to be really, really late, and Call had no idea why they were out of their rooms. Jasper had a book open on a stone table, his hand extended in front of him. Again and again he thrust out his fingers, gritting his teeth and scrunching up his eyes, until Call started to worry he was going to make his head explode, trying to force the magic to come. Again and again, there was a spark or a puff of smoke between his fingers, but nothing else. Jasper looked ready to scream with disappointment and frustration. Celia paced back and forth on the other side of the table.
You promised that if I helped you, you'd help me, but it's almost 2 in the morning and you haven't helped me with anything.
We're still on me, Jasper yelled.
Fine,
Celia said long-sufferingly, sitting down on a stone stool.
Try again.
I've got to get this right,
Jasper said softly.
I've got to.
I am the best. I am the best Iron Year mage at the Magisterium. Better than Tamara. Better than Aaron. Better than Colum. Better than everyone.
Call wasn't sure if he belonged on that list of people Jasper clearly worried he wasn't better than, but he was flattered. He was also a little disappointed that Celia was hanging out with Jasper. Warren scrabbled in his cage. Call turned to see what the fussing was about. The lizard was staring at a framed illustration of a man with huge, red-orange, spiraling eyes, magnified and diagrammed to one side of the body.
Chaos-ridden, Call thought.
A shudder ran through him at the sight, along with something else. Some feeling he couldn't quite put his finger on, as if the inside of his head was itchy, or he was hungry or thirsty.
Who's there?
Jasper said, looking up. He raised his hand defensively, half-shielding his face. Feeling stupid, Call waved.
It's just me. I got a little lost, and I saw light coming from in here, so I...
Call?
Jasper stepped away from the book, his hands flailing.
You were spying on me, he shouted. Did you follow me here?
No, I... Are you going to tell on us? Is that the idea? You going to get me in trouble so I don't do better than you at the next test?
Jasper sneered, though he was clearly shaken. If we want to do better than you on the next test, all we have to do is wait until the next test, said Call, unable to resist. Jasper looked like he was going to burst.
I'm going to tell everyone you were sneaking around at night.
Fine, said Call. I'll tell everyone the same thing about you.
You wouldn't dare,
Jasper said, grabbing the edge of the table.
You wouldn't, would you, Call? Celia asked.
All of a sudden, Call didn't want to be there anymore. He didn't want to be fighting with Jasper, or threatening Celia, wandering around in the dark, or hiding in a corner while the masters talked about things that made the hair rise up on his neck. He wanted to be in bed, thinking over his conversation with his dad, trying to figure out what Alistair had meant, and if there was any way that it wasn't as bad as it had seemed. Plus, he wanted to hunt around the bottom of his box for any last gummy candies, "Look, Jasper," he said, "I didn't take your spot on purpose. You should at least be able to tell by now that I actually really didn't want it." Jasper dropped his hand. His expensive haircut was growing out, his black hair falling over his eyes. "Don't you get it? That makes it worse." Cole blinked at him.
"What?"
"You don't know," Jasper said, his hands curling into fists. "You just don't know what it's like. My family lost everything in the Second War. Money, reputation, everything."
"Jasper, stop."
Celia reached for him, clearly trying to snap him out of his rant. It didn't work. "And if I make something of myself," Jasper said, "if I'm the best, it could change all of that. But for you, being here means nothing." He slammed his hand down on the table. To Cole's surprise, sparks flew up from around Jasper's fingers. Jasper jerked his hand back, staring at it.
"I guess you made it work," Cole said.
His voice sounded strange in the room, soft after all Jasper's yelling. For a second, the two boys looked at each other. Then Jasper turned away and Cole, feeling awkward, started to back toward the door of the library.
"I'm sorry, Cole," Celia called after him. "He'll be less crazy in the morning."
Cole didn't reply. It wasn't fair, he thought. Aaron having no family, and Tamara having her scary family, and now Jasper. Soon there would be no one left for him to hate without feeling bad about it. He grabbed the cage and headed for the nearest passageway. "No more detours," he told the lizard.
"Warren knows the best way. Sometimes the best way isn't the fastest."
Warren shouldn't talk about himself in the third person, Cole said, but he let the elemental lead him the rest of the way back to his room. As Cole raised his cuff to open the door, the lizard spoke.
"Let me out," he said.
Cole paused.
"You promised. Let me out."
The lizard looked up at him imploringly with his burning eyes. Cole set the cage down on the stone floor outside of his door and knelt down next to it. As he reached for the latch, he realized that he had failed to ask the one question he should have asked from the start.
Warren?
Why did Master Rufus have you in a cage in his office? The eyebrows on the elemental went up.
"Sneaky," he said.
Cole shook his head, not sure which one of them Warren was talking about. "What does that mean?"
"Let me out,"
said the lizard, his raspy voice sounding more like a hiss.
"You promised."
With a sigh, Cole opened the cage. The lizard raced up the wall toward a spider-webby alcove in the ceiling. Cole could barely see the fire along his back. Cole took the cage and stowed it behind a cluster of stalagmites, hoping he could get rid of it in a more permanent fashion the next morning.
"Okay, well, good night," said Cole before he went inside.
As the door opened, the elemental raced in ahead of him. Cole tried to shoo him back out, but Warren followed him into his bedroom and curled up against one of the glowing rocks on the wall, becoming nearly invisible.
"Staying over?" Cole asked.
The lizard remained as still as stone, his red eyes at half-mast, his tongue poking slightly out of the side of his mouth. Cole was too exhausted to worry about whether having an elemental, even a sleeping elemental, hanging around was safe.
pushing the box and all the stuff his father sent onto the floor. He curled up on his bed, one hand clasped on his dad's wristband, fingers tracing the smooth stones as he slipped into slumber. His last thought before he dropped off was of the spiraling bright eyes of the chaos-ridden. Chapter 13. Call woke the next day, scared that Master Rufus would say something about the scattered papers, wrecked model, and missing envelope in his office. And even more scared that he would say something about the missing elemental. He dragged his heels all the way to the refectory, but when he got there, he overheard a heated argument between Master Rufus and Master Milagros. "For the last time, Rufus," she was saying in the tone of someone much aggrieved, "I don't have your lizard." Cole didn't know whether to feel bad or laugh. After breakfast, Rufus led them down to the river, where he instructed them to practice picking up water, tossing it into the air, and catching it without getting wet. Pretty soon, Call, Tamara, and Aaron were breathless, laughing, and soaked. By the time the day was over, Call was exhausted, so exhausted that what had happened the day before seemed distant and unreal. He headed back to his room to puzzle over his father's letter and the wristband, but was sidetracked by the fact that Warren had eaten one of his shoelaces, slurping it up like a noodle. "Dumb lizard," he muttered, hiding the armband he'd worn in the Wyvern exercise and the crumpled letter from his father in the bottom drawer of his desk and shoving it closed so the elemental wouldn't eat them, too. Warren said nothing. His eyes had gone a grayish color. Cole suspected the shoelace was disagreeing with him. The biggest distraction from trying to puzzle out what his dad had meant turned out, to Cole's surprise, to be his classes. There was no more room of sand and boredom. Instead, there was a roster of new exercises that made the next few weeks go by quickly. The training was still hard and frustrating. But as Master Rufus revealed more of the magical world, Call found himself growing increasingly fascinated. Master Rufus taught them to feel their affinity with the elements and to better understand the meaning behind what he called the Cinquain, which, along with the rest of the five principles of magic, Call could now recite in his sleep. Fire wants to burn. Water wants to flow. Air wants to rise. Earth wants to bind. Chaos wants to devour. They learned how to kindle small fires and to make flames dance on their palms. They learned to make waves in the cave pools and call over the pale fish, although not to operate the boats, which continued to annoy Call to no end. They even began to learn Call's favorite thing, levitating.
"Focus and practice,"
Master Rufus said, leading them to a room covered with bouncy mats stuffed with moss and pine needles from the trees outside the magisterium.
"There are no shortcuts, mages. There's only focus and practice. So get to it."
They took turns trying to draw energy from the air around them and use it to push themselves upward from the soles of their feet. It was much harder to balance than Call would have thought. Over and over they fell giggling onto the mats, on top of one another. Aaron wound up with one of Tamara's pigtails in his mouth and Call with Tamara's foot on his neck. Finally, almost at the end of the lesson, something clicked for Call, and he was able to hover in the air, a foot above the ground, without wobbling at all. There was no gravity pushing down on his leg, nothing that might keep him from soaring sideways through the air except his own lack of practice. Dreams of the day that he could fly through the halls of the magisterium far faster than he could ever have run exploded through his head. It would be like skateboarding, only better, faster, higher, and with even crazier stunts. Then Tamara crossed her eyes at him, and he lost his concentration and thumped back to the mat. He lay there for a second, just breathing. For those moments that he'd hung in the air, his leg hadn't hurt. Not even a little. Neither Tamara nor Aaron had managed to get really airborne before the end of the lesson, but Master Rufus seemed delighted with their lack of progress. Several times he declared it to be the funniest thing he'd seen in a long while. Master Rufus promised them that by the end of the year they'd be able to call up a blast of each element, walk through fire, and breathe underwater. In their silver year, they would be able to call on the less evident powers of the elements to shape air into illusions, fire into prophecies, earth into bindings, and water into healing. The thought of being able to do those things thrilled Call. But whenever he thought of the end of the year, he recalled the words of his father's note to Rufus. "You must bind Colum's magic before the end of the year." Earth magic. If he made it to his silver year, maybe he'd learn what binding things entailed. In one of the Friday lectures, Master Lemuel taught them more about counterweights, warning them that if they overextended themselves and felt themselves being drawn into an element, they should reach for its opposite, just as they had reached for earth when battling an air elemental. Call asked how you were supposed to reach for soul, since that was the counterweight of chaos. Master Lemuel snapped that if Call were battling a chaos mage, it wouldn't matter what he reached for, because he'd be about to die. Drew gave him a sympathetic look.
"It's okay," he said under his breath.
"Stop that, Andrew," said Master Lemuel in a frozen voice. "You know, there was a time when apprentices who failed to show respect to their masters were whipped with saplings."
"Lemuel," said Master Milagros anxiously, noting the horrified looks on the faces of her own students. "I don't think..."
"Unfortunately, that was centuries ago," said Master Lemuel. "But I can assure you, Andrew, that if you keep whispering behind my back, you'll be sorry you ever came to the Magisterium."
His thin lips curled into a smile.
"Now come up here and demonstrate how you reach for water when you're using fire, Gwenda. If you would come up to assist him with the counterweight."
Gwenda walked to the front. After hesitating, Drew shuffled up beside her, his shoulders hunched. He endured 20 minutes of merciless teasing from Lemuel when he couldn't extinguish the flame in his hand, even though Gwenda was holding out a bowl of water to him with so much hopeful enthusiasm that some of it slopped onto his sneakers.
"Come on, Drew,"
she kept whispering, until, eventually, Master Lemuel told her to be quiet. It made Call appreciate Master Rufus more, even when he gave them a lecture about the duties of mages, most of which seemed really obvious. Like keeping magic a secret, not using magic for personal gain or evil ends, and sharing all knowledge gleaned from magical study with the rest of the mage community. Apparently, mages who'd achieved mastery in their study of the elements were required to take apprentices as part of that sharing all knowledge thing, meaning there were different masters at the Magisterium at different times, though those who'd found their vocation as teachers were there permanently. Being forced to take apprentices explained a lot about Master Lemuel. Call was more interested in Master Rockmaple's second lecture about elementals. Mostly, it turned out, they weren't sentient creatures. Some kept the same shapes they'd held for centuries, while others fed on magic to become large and dangerous. A few had even been known to absorb wizards. It made Call shudder to think of Warren after hearing that. What had he let loose in the Magisterium? What exactly was sleeping above his bed and eating his shoelaces? Call learned more about the Third Mage War, too, but none of it gave him any more idea why his father wanted Call's magic bound. Tamara laughed more as time went on, often with a guilty look, while oddly, Aaron became more serious as the three of them settled more and more into the Magisterium. Call felt he'd learned his way around and was no longer afraid of getting lost on his way to the library, the classrooms, or even the gallery. Nor did he think it was weird any more to eat mushrooms and piles of lichen that tasted like delicious roasted chicken, or spaghetti, or lo mein. He and Jasper still kept their distance, but Celia stayed his friend, acting like nothing weird had happened that night. Call began to dread the end of the year, when his father would want him to come home for good. He had real friends for the first time in his life, friends who didn't think he was too weird or messed up because of his leg. And he had magic. He didn't want to give any of it up, even though he'd vowed he would. It was hard to keep track of seasons passing underground. Sometimes, Master Rufus and the other masters would take them outside for various earth exercises. It was always kind of cool to see what the other students were good at, when Rufus showed them how to blend elemental magic to make plants grow. Kai Hale made a single seedling sprout and grow so huge that the next day Master Rockmaple had to come out with an axe and chop it down. Celia was able to summon animals from underground, though not, to Cole's disappointment, any naked mole rats. And Tamara was amazing at using the magnetism of the earth to find paths when everyone got lost. As the outside world started to catch fire in fall colors, the caves grew colder. Big metal bowls full of hot stones lined the corridors, heating the air, and a blazing fire was always in the gallery now when they went there to watch movies. The cold didn't bother Cole. He felt as if he was getting tougher somehow. He was fairly sure he had grown at least an inch. And he could walk farther, despite his leg, probably because Master Rufus was fond of taking them on hikes through the caverns, or bouldering among the big rocks above ground. At night, sometimes, Call would take out the wristband from the bedside table and read over both letters from his dad. He wished he could tell his father about the things he was doing, but he never did. They were well into winter when Master Rufus announced that it was time they started exploring the caves on their own, without his assistance. He'd already shown them how to find their way among the deeper caverns by using earth magic to light up individual rocks and create a path back. "You want us to get lost on purpose?" Call asked.
"Something like that," said Rufus. "Ideally, you will follow my instruction. Find the room you are meant to find, and return without getting lost at all, but that part is up to you."
Tamara clapped her hands together and smiled a slightly devilish smile. "Sounds like fun."
"Together," Master Rufus told her. "No running off, and leaving those two stumbling around in the dark."
Her smile dimmed a little. "Oh, okay."
"We could make a bet," Call said, thinking of Warren.
If he could use some of the shortcuts the lizard had shown him, he might out-navigate her. See who finishes first.
"D Did either of you hear me?
Master Rufus asked.
I said...
Together, said Aaron. I'll make sure we stick by each other.
See that you do, said Master Rufus. Now, here is your assignment. At the depths of the second level of the caves is a place called the Butterfly Pool. It's fed from a spring above ground. The water there is heavy with minerals that make it excellent for smithing weapons. Like that knife on your belt. He gestured to Miri, making Call touch the hilt self-consciously. That blade was made here in the Magisterium with water from the Butterfly Pool. I want the three of you to find the room, gather some of the water, and return to me here.
Do we get a bucket? Call asked.
I think you know the answer to that, Callum.
Rufus drew a rolled-up parchment from his uniform and handed it to Aaron.
Here is your map. Follow it closely to reach the Butterfly Pool, but remember to light stones to mark your way. You can't always rely on a map to bring you back.
Master Rufus settled down on a large boulder which gently shaped and reformed itself underneath him until it resembled an armchair.
You will take turns carrying the water. If you drop it, then you'll just have to return for more.
The three apprentices exchanged glances.
When do we start? Asked Aaron.
Master Rufus drew a heavy bound book from his pocket and began to read.
Immediately.
Aaron spread the paper out on a rock in front of him, scowling, then looked over at Master Rufus.
Okay, he said quickly. We head down and east.
Call crowded close, looking at the map over Aaron's shoulder.
Past the library looks like the quickest way.
Tamara turned the map with a smirk.
Now north is actually pointing north. That should help.
Library's still the right way, Call said, so it didn't help that much.
Aaron rolled his eyes and stood, folding the map.
Let's go, before you two get out compasses and start measuring distances with string.
They headed out, at first going through the familiar parts of the cave. They passed into the library, following its spirals down, like navigating the inside of a nautilus shell. The very bottom led out into the lower levels of the caves. The air grew heavier and colder, and the smell of minerals hung thick in the air. Call felt the change immediately. The passageway they were in was cramped and narrow, the roof low overhead. Aaron, the tallest of the three, almost had to bend down to walk along it. Finally, the passageway opened out into a larger cavern. Tamara touched one of the walls, lighting up a crystal and illuminating the roots. They hung down in creepy, spidery vines to almost touch the tops of a vivid orange stream that smoked sulphurously, filling the room with a burnt odor. Massive mushrooms grew along the sides of the stream, striped in unnaturally bright greens and turquoises and purples.
I wonder what would happen if we ate them.
Call mused as they picked their way among the plants.
I wouldn't try it to find out, said Aaron, raising his hand.
He had taught himself to make a ball of glowing blue fire the week before and was very excited about it. He was constantly making balls of glowing fire, even when they didn't need light or anything. He held the fire up in one hand, and the map in the other.
That way, he said, gesturing to a passage off to the left. Through the root room.
The rooms have names?
Tamara said, stepping gingerly around the mushrooms.
No, I'm just calling it that. I mean, we won't forget it if it has a name, right?
Tamara furrowed her brow, considering.
I guess.
Better than Butterfly Pool, Call said.
I mean, what kind of name is that for a lake that helps make weapons? It should be called Killer Lake, or the Pond of Stabbings, or Murder Puddle.
Yeah, Tamara said dryly, and we can start calling you Master Obvious.
The next chamber had thick stalactites, white as giant shark's teeth, clumped together as though they might really be attached to the jaw of some long-buried monster.
Passing beneath this scarily sharp overhang, Call, Aaron, and Tamara next walked through a narrow circular opening. Here, the rock was pocked with cave formations that looked eaten away, as though they were in some kind of oversized termite nest. Call concentrated, and a crystal in the far corner began to glow, so they wouldn't forget they'd been this way.
"Is this place on the map?" he asked.
Aaron squinted.
"Yeah.
In fact, we're almost there. Just one room to the south." He disappeared through a dark archway, then reappeared a moment later, flushed with victory.
"Found it!"
Tamara and Call crowded in after him. For a moment, they were silent. Even after seeing all sorts of spectacular underground rooms, including the library and the gallery, Call knew he was seeing something special. From a gap, high in one wall, a torrent of water poured out, splashing down into a huge pool that glowed blue, as if lit from the inside. The walls were feathery with bright green lichen, and the contrast of the green and the blue made Call feel as if he were standing inside a huge marble. The air was redolent with the odor of some unfamiliar and tantalizing spice.
"Huh," Aaron said after a few minutes.
"It is kind of weird that it's called the Butterfly Pool." Tamara walked up to the edge.
"I think that's because the water is the color of those blue butterflies. What are they called?"
"Blue monarchs," Call said. His father had always been a fan of butterflies. He had a whole collection of them pinned under glass over his desk. Tamara put her hand out. The pool shuddered, and a sphere of water rose up from it. Even as it shifted and rippled across the surface, it kept its shape.
"There,"
Tamara said a little breathlessly.
"Great," said Aaron. "How long do you think you can hold it?"
"I don't know." She tossed back a thick, dark braid, trying not to let any strain show on her face.
"I'll tell you when my concentration starts to give."
Aaron nodded, smoothing the map out against one of the damp walls.
"Now we just need to find our way."
At that moment, the map in his hands burst into flames. Aaron yelled and pulled his fingers away from the blackening pages, sparking through the air. The pages fell in a shower of embers and hit the floor. Tamara yelped, losing her focus. The water she'd been suspending splashed down over her uniform and turned into a puddle at their feet. The three of them looked at one another, wide-eyed. Call straightened his shoulders.
"I guess that's what Master Rufus meant," he said. "We're supposed to follow our lighted stones or marks or whatever in order to get back. That map was only good for the way here."
"Should be easy," Tamara said. "I mean, I only lit one of them, but you guys lit more, right?"
"I lit one too," said Call, looking hopefully in Aaron's direction.
Aaron didn't look back. Tamara frowned.
"Ugh."
"Fine. We'll figure out the way back. You carry the water." With a shrug, Call went over to the lake and concentrated on shaping a ball. Call drew on the air around him to move the water and felt the push-pull of the elements inside him. He wasn't as good at it as Tamara, but he did okay. His ball dripped only a little as it hovered. Aaron frowned and pointed.
"We came in there,"
This way. I think... Tamara followed Aaron, and Call went after her. The ball of water spinning over his head as if he had his own personal storm cloud. The next room was familiar, the underground stream, the colorful mushrooms. Call navigated among them carefully, afraid that at any moment his water ball would fall directly on his head.
Look, Tamara was saying, there's lit up stones over here.
I think those are just bioluminescence, Aaron said in a worried voice. He tapped at them, and then turned back to her with a shrug. I don't know.
Well, I do. We go this way.
She set off with a determined stride. Call followed, left, right, left, through a cavern full of huge stalactites growing in the shapes of leaves. Don't drop the water. Around a corner, through a gap between boulders. Keep it together, Call. There were sharp rocks all around, and Call nearly walked right into a wall because Tamara and Aaron had stopped dead. They were arguing. I told you it was just glowing lichen, Aaron said, clearly frustrated. They were in a large room with a stone cistern in the center, bubbling gently.
Now we're lost. Well, if you'd remembered to light up stones as we went, I was reading the map,
Aaron said, exasperated. In a way, Call thought, it was kind of nice to know that Aaron could get irritated and unreasonable. Then, Aaron and Tamara turned to glare at Call, and Call nearly dropped the spinning globe he'd been balancing. Aaron had to throw out a hand to stabilize the water. It hovered in the air between them, shedding droplets.
What?
Call said.
Well, do you have any idea where we are? Said Tamara.
No, Call admitted, glancing around at the smooth walls.
But there must be some way to find our way back. Master Rufus wouldn't just send us down here to get lost and die. That's pretty optimistic coming from you, said Tamara. Funny.
Call made a face to show her exactly how funny it wasn't.
Stop it, both of you, Aaron said. Arguing isn't going to get us anywhere.
Well, following you is going to get us somewhere, Call said, and that somewhere is about as far away as you can get from where we need to be. Aaron shook his head. Disappointed.
Why do you have to be such a jerk?
He asked Call.
Because you never are, Call told him staunchly. I have to be a jerk for both of us.
Tamara sighed and then, after a moment, laughed.
Can we admit that we're all at fault? We all messed up.
Aaron looked like he didn't want to admit it. But finally he nodded.
Yeah, I forgot that we weren't allowed to use the map on the way back.
Yeah, said Call.
Me too.
Sorry.
Aren't you good at finding paths, Tamara? What about all that tapping into the metal of the earth stuff?
I can try, Tamara said, her voice a little hollow.
But that just lets me know which way north is, not how these passageways intersect. But we've got to come across something familiar eventually, right?
It was scary to think about wandering through the tunnels, to think about the pits of darkness they could fall into, the sucking mud pools, and the weird, choking steam rising from them. But Call didn't have a better plan.
Okay, he said.
They began to walk. This was pretty much exactly what his father had warned him about.
You know what I miss from home?
Aaron asked as they went, picking their way past concretions that looked like tattered tapestries.
It's going to sound super lame, but I miss fast food, like the greasiest possible burger and a mound of fries. Even the smell of them
I miss lying out in the backyard in the grass, Call said. And video games, I definitely miss video games.
I miss wasting time online, Tamara said, surprising Call.
Don't give me that face. I lived in a town just like the kind you guys grew up in.
Aaron snorted. Not like where I grew up.
I mean, she said, taking over the maintenance of the spinning blue globe of water. I grew up in a town full of people who weren't mages. There was a bookshop where the few mages met up or left messages for one another, but other than that, it was normal.
I'm just surprised your parents let you go online, Call said.
It was such a regular, non-fancy way to waste time.
When he imagined her outside the magisterium, having fun, he imagined her riding a polo pony, although he wasn't exactly sure what that was or how it was different from a regular pony.
Tamara smiled at him. Well, they didn't exactly let me.
Call wanted to know more about that, but as he opened his mouth to ask, his breath caught at the sight of the remarkable room that had just appeared in front of him.
Chapter 14.
The cavern was quite large. The ceiling, carved to be vaulted like the ceiling of a cathedral. There were 5 tall archways, each flanked by marble pillars, each inlaid with a different metal: iron, copper, bronze, silver, or gold. The walls were marble, indented with thousands of human handprints, a name carved over each one. A bronze statue of a young girl with long, wind-whipped hair was in the center of the room. Her face was upturned, the plaque beneath her read, Verity Torres.
What is this place? Aaron asked.
It's the Hall of Graduates, said Tamara, whirling around, her expression awed. When apprentices become journeymen, and journeywomen mages, they come here and press their handprints into the stone. Everyone who's ever graduated from the magisterium is here. My mom and dad, Call said,
walking through the room, looking for their names.
There was his father's, Alistair Hunt, high up the wall, too high for Call to reach.
His father must have levitated to get his hand there. A smile pulled at the corner of Call's mouth, as he imagined his father, this very young version of his father, flying just to show he could. He was surprised that his mother's handprint wasn't next to his father's, since he assumed they'd been in love even as students. But maybe the handprints didn't work that way. It took a few minutes more, but finally he found it, over on a far wall. Sarah Novak. Pressed into the base of a stalagmite, the name scrawled in a fine point, like it had been done with a weapon. Call crouched down and rested his hand inside the place his mother's had been. Her hands were shaped like his. His fingers fit neatly inside the phantom ones of a girl long dead. At 12, his hands were as big as hers had been at 17. He wanted to feel something with his hand pressed inside his mother's, but he wasn't sure he felt anything at all.
Call, Tamara said.
She touched him gently on the shoulder. Call glanced back at his 2 friends. Both of them had the same concerned looks on their faces. He knew what they were thinking. Knew they were feeling sorry for him. He shot to his feet, shaking off Tamara's hand.
I'm fine, he said, clearing his throat.
Look at this!
Aaron was standing in the middle of the room, in front of a large archway made of a shimmering white stone. Carved across the front were the words, Prima Materia. Aaron ducked under it, popping out the other side with a curious look.
It's an archway to nowhere.
Prima Materia,
Tamara murmured, and her eyes widened.
It's the first gate. At the end of every year at the Magisterium, you go through a gate. It's for when you've learned to control your magic, to use your counterweights properly. After, you get your Copper Year armband.
Aaron went pale.
You mean I just went through the gate early? Am I going to be in trouble?
Tamara shrugged at him.
I don't think so. It doesn't seem like it's activated.
They all squinted at it. It stood there, being a stone archway in a dark room. Call had to agree that it didn't seem exactly operational.
Did you see anything like that on the map?
Call asked.
Aaron shook his head. I don't remember.
So even though we found a landmark, we're just as lost as before?
Tamara kicked the wall. Something dropped down. A large, lizardy thing with shining eyes and flames all down its back and...
eyebrows. Oh my God, said Tamara,
her eyes rounding into saucers. The ball of water took a dangerous dip toward the floor as Aaron stared. And this time, Cole had to stabilize it.
Cole. Always lost, Cole. You should stay in your room. It's warm there,
Warren said. Tamara and Aaron turned to Cole, shooting him both exclamation points and question marks with their eyes.
This is Warren, Cole said. He's,
this lizard I know.
That's a fire elemental, Tamara said. What are you doing knowing an elemental?
She stared at Cole. Cole opened his mouth to disavow friendship with Warren. It wasn't like they were close. But that didn't seem the best way to persuade Warren to help them, and Cole knew that, at this point. They really needed Warren's help.
Didn't Master Rufus say some of them were into, you know,
absorbing?
Aaron's gaze followed the lizard.
Well, he hasn't absorbed me yet, Cole said, and he slept in my room. Warren, can you help us? We're lost, really lost. We just need you to lead us back.
Shortcuts, slippery paths. Warren knows all the hidden places. What will you trade for the way back?
The lizard scrambled closer to them, spraying gravel from between its toes.
What do you want? Tamara asked, rooting around in her pockets. I have some gum and a hair tie, but that's about it.
I have some food,
Aaron offered, candy mostly, from the gallery.
I'm holding the water, Cole said. I can't go through my pockets, but, you can have my shoelaces.
All of it,
said the lizard, head bobbing up and down with excitement.
I will have all of it when we get there, and then my master will be pleased.
What?
Cole frowned, not sure he'd heard the elemental quite right.
Your master will be pleased when you are back, the lizard said. Master Rufus. Your master.
Then he ran along the cave wall, fast enough that Cole had to breathe hard to keep up and keep the ball of water moving at the same time. A few drops got lost in the rush.
Come on,
he said to Tamara and Aaron, his leg aching from the effort. With a shrug, Aaron followed.
Well, I did promise him my gum, Tamara said, jogging after them.
They followed Warren through a sulfur-streaked hall, orange and yellow and weirdly smooth on all sides. Cole felt as though they were walking through the throat of some enormous giant. The floor was unpleasantly moist with reddish lichen, thick and spongy. Aaron nearly tripped, and Cole's feet sank into it, sending the ball of water wobbling as he steadied himself. Tamara stabilized it with a